From the team at CTS, this is the Trainwright Podcast, our show for endurance athletes who want to learn how to train more effectively and improve their performance. I'm Coach Corinne Malcolm, your host for the running edition of the show, where it's my job to interview top coaches, scientists, experts, and athletes in the world of running to bring you actionable training tips you can apply to your training. Make sure you also listen in to our cycling edition of the show with my co-host, Coach Adam Pulford, which alternates weekly with the running episodes. Now, let's dive into the show and learn how you can train right. Where are you currently going to purchase all your sports nutrition needs? If you didn't immediately yell, "The Feed," you're missing out. The Feed is the largest online marketplace for sports nutrition, offering brands you know and love, from Goo to Scratch Labs to Morton. They have you covered. Plus, they have athlete customizable supplements called Feed Formulas. I just got my subscription in the mail last week, and I'm super impressed. Feed Formulas are personalized for you and were developed in part with EF Pro Cycling Team doctor, Dr. Kevin Sprouse. Your subscription comes with 28 daily pouches, no more individual pill bottles falling out of your bathroom vanity, making a mess. The Athlete Daily Formula gives you strong nutritional coverage for anything that might be slipping through the cracks with your day-to-day nutrition. To get 50% off your first order, head over to thefeed.com/trainright and order today. Again, that's thefeed.com/trainright. Today on the podcast, we are diving into the what, where, why, and how of utilizing poles in the sport of trail and ultra running. I'm joined by Coach Adam St. Pierre to help break this topic down. While Adam and I fall into the camp of pole zealots, we know many of you might be more pole curious or even pole skeptical, and that's okay. Throughout this discussion, we try to zero in on types of runners who might want to use poles, types of races where we might really strongly encourage you to try them, how strength training can help in this process, and when to put the poles away, because there's a time for that too. I had a lot of fun chatting with Adam, and I hope you too enjoy this conversation. My guest today is no stranger to this podcast. He's actually been on once before with former host Hilly Goat Allen, talking all things training. I'm talking about the one and only Adam St. Pierre. Adam was one of my coaching colleagues at CTS. He's now the head coach for the cross-country ski program at Montana State University, where I also skied in college, and Adam is my coach, so I'm a little bit biased, but he's done it all. He's been an exercise physiologist and biomechanist in CU at the medical, it's like Medical Performance Sports Center.
The Boulder Center for Sports Medicine when I was there. Now it's the CU Sports Medicine and Performance Center.
Yeah. And you still work closely with USA Ski and Snowboard, doing various jobs for them. You yourself are an ultra runner. You've run Hard Rock 100, you've run Wasatch 100, you've done a bunch of the big ones, and you come from a Nordic skiing background. So I feel like you are the perfect guest to talk about how trail and ultra runners can, should, or should not utilize poles when it comes to big mountainous races this summer.
I am a very strong proponent of using poles for mountainous ultra races.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into that for sure. And we're both a little bit biased. We both come from a ski background, so poles are an extension of our arms, but that's not the case for everyone.
Yeah, and that's an important distinction.
Yeah, so I think what we want to talk about more than anything, too, is kind of like the what, where, why, how runners can think about using poles. I've got a bunch of athletes from the Midwest training for things like UTMB, which is a pretty intimidating proposition coming from the flatland. And so I think where we want to start is, you know, I think we should start with an example. I think we should start with, you've got an athlete, let's say, you know, the common thing would be like they've got a Leadville, a Ouray 100, a UTMB. They've got maybe a hilly mountainous race coming up, Wasatch 100. Bighorn is this weekend, for example. What do you think an athlete should be doing throughout their season? Maybe if particularly they don't live in a place where it necessitates them using poles every single run. How can they start to incorporate using poles in their training? When should they start doing that? Like, how do we get athletes off the ground when it comes to using poles, which can feel super foreign?
So I think, a good place to start is what do poles do for a runner? And you know that, running is primarily a leg sport. We also know that in ultra marathon, you know, leg fatigue is one of the main factors where we're training to survive for the duration of the race. You get into some of the hillier, the more ascending, more descending types of races, and you're putting more, you know, fatigue and more eccentric contraction, more leg damaging work onto your legs. So pulls are a means of switching some of that workload to the upper body. So it's important to note that like pulls increase the energy cost of running. So, right, if you go up a hill without pulls and then you go up it with pulls, it is more costly. It takes more calories, more oxygen, you know, more work to get those pulls up the hill with you. But it's less work on the legs. So the hope in, you know, an ultra endurance event is that by shifting some of that work from the legs to the arms, your legs don't crap out on you in, you know, the last 30 miles, the last 20 miles. So often the choice of whether to use pulls or not is a factor of, you know, the terrain. You know, if it's a flat course, you know, Western States doesn't allow pulls, but that's not a course most people would use pulls for anyway. It doesn't have enough vert. Then you look at a race like a Speed Goat 50K. You know, some 50Ks, absolutely, you know, you don't need pulls. But then you add the vert component and maybe pulls help. But then there's also an element of personal preference. So I'm sort of proud of being generally one of the faster guys with pulls out there. Like I remember a couple of years ago at San Juan Solstice, passing a guy and moving into the top 10. He was like, damn it, I got passed by an old guy with pulls. Like I wasn't even that old at the time. It's just like, there's this connotation that pulls are for, you know, old guys.
Yeah. That's a big difference between like European trail and ultra running, I think, and in the US too, is that there are less of us that are kind of year round, quote unquote, mountain athletes, i.e. using like Skimo or Nordic skiing in the winter to balance out our running season in the spring and fall and summer. In Europe, I feel like most people gravitate towards that winter sport. And so it seems like a natural back and forth. So I think what I thought was really interesting about that was, okay, you've got this cost benefit analysis, right? You've got athletes that, yes, pulls should save your legs. I personally feel that way, but it is an energetic cost. Like, how do athletes start to make that decision? Does it just come down to personal preference? Like, what does that look like? Because I think that's the hard part when I work with these athletes from Texas or Michigan or Wisconsin, and they're, you know, they're trying to weigh out, do I use pulls or not? Like, is it going to be practical for me if I don't feel efficient using pulls?
Yeah. And that's it. Again, there's no cut and dry answer. It's largely personal preference. And like the tricky thing is, you know, for instance, like I do probably 85% of my running with pulls. Granted, I don't like running flat places. So I just go to the hills and I run with pulls. And, you know, if it's, you know, 15 or 20% grade or higher, I'm in a power hike mode. If it's that, you know, 8 to 15% kind of douchey grade, you know, I might be scrunning, you know, ski running, where you're still in a running motion, but you're also using your arms for a little bit of propulsion. And then if it's flat, I might not use my poles, but that's pretty rare. You know, if I've got my poles out, I'm using them. I'm not someone who stashes them for parts of races. The other factor to consider is downhills. You know, I did the old Gabe. I ended up doing the 30K last weekend instead of the 50K. And I was kind of shocked at the amount of people who are just carrying their poles on downhills. Because for me, like, downhills is where you really save the impact on your legs. You can kind of just lean into the hill and take really quick steps and use your poles to lessen some of the, you know, that quad deadening impact. The tricky thing there is it's such a technical skill. It has to be practiced to the point of mastery before it becomes something you'd want to use. You know, for instance, I've run with people who are trying to learn to use poles, and they, you know, they trip themselves on the downhills. And that's not, obviously not not an ideal scenario in a race to be taking yourself out, you know, causing yourself to fall and potentially jeopardizing your finish. So then it's, do you want to use poles enough in your race to commit to the time and training it takes to get good enough at using them. So there's a bit of a catch-22 there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I keep going back to the flatland athlete, right? Because I feel like that's the most, for the most part, those are the biggest question marks. Like, how can those athletes get in that practice, utilize it? Do you think there's like a minimum threshold, or do you think that's going to come down to the individual athlete?
I think it's super, super individual, right? Like you and I come from a ski background. We're used to using our arms and legs in a contralateral fashion. Whereas for someone who's, you know, never skied before or never used poles before, you just have these awkward, long, foreign objects attached to your hands. And many athletes may find that that's really challenging and takes a long time to get used to. I would probably, with those athletes, have them use them on flat runs, just purely to get the, you know, get the hang of it. And if you look at, you know, many of the top skiers in the world, Norwegians and Swedes and Finns are known for their moose hoofing workouts, which are essentially running with poles in, you know, not necessarily hilly terrain, but kind of boggy terrain or slow terrain. And just getting the hang of moving your arms and legs, you know, contralaterally, which is the normal running mechanic. But then adding in a pole to the equation, and just getting used to not sticking them between your legs.
Yeah, I definitely see people pick up poles for the first time, and it's like they all of a sudden try to switch to same arm, same leg motion. I'm like, no, it's just like running. Yeah. It's just like running, but now you're holding sticks. Like, that's okay.
Exactly.
The one other thing I think, you know, why practicing it, one, it helps with like the general feel and the general motion, but the other part is like that strength component, because you think of it, it's more metabolically demanding, right? Because you're using more muscle mass to move yourself around on terrain. So that's less, quote unquote, efficient, particularly when you're learning how to do it. But the other component I see with a lot of runners, right, is that particularly if they're not doing strength routinely, that could become a limiting factor, right? Yeah. Like all of a sudden, like they're in races and their triceps are tired and their lats are tired and their core is tired because they haven't been doing this motion. Do you think that you can, I'm not going to say, you know, I don't want to say cheat it, but like, is there a way you can implement strength training or utilize strength training to feel not necessarily more efficient with poles, but at least have the strength to utilize them out on the trail?
I mean, you can certainly target the muscles poles engage. You know, I've definitely had races where the sorest things after the race are my abs, you know, rectus abdominis, as well as my triceps. Because, you know, those muscles are getting used and maybe I'm not training them, you know, enough in my day-to-day training, although I use poles a lot. So I think that's probably just a factor of me using them a lot. But I mean, you can easily do, you know, you can do dips or tricep extensions. You can do pull-ups. You can do lat pull-down. You can target those muscles so that fatigue in those, you know, non-essential running muscles doesn't become a limiting factor. You know, whether that will help you become a more proficient user of poles, I can't say, but it can't hurt, you know, to do some pull-ups and dips a couple times a week, you know, makes you look good when you take your tarp off for those hot summer runs.
Yes, there is a little bit of that too. I guess, okay, so this was brought to my attention recently. Francois Dehaene and Dylan Bowman are the exact same height, but Dylan Bowman uses poles that are about 10 centimeters shorter than what Francois Dehaene uses. And part of that is probably due to a ski background, but all of a sudden, you know, they're tall guys. They're over 6 feet tall. And when your poles are much shorter, you're going to utilize different muscle groups, right? Like you're going to utilize more like your biceps if your poles are a little bit shorter versus being able to utilize like your lats and your poles are a little bit longer. Do you think that there is a formula or a specific way that runners should think about sizing poles? Because I think that's a common question I get. Like what length am I supposed to get? Beyond personal preference, do you think there's a way that runners should be thinking about that when they go to purchase poles to use over the summer months?
The general rule of thumb that people use is to stand with your elbows close to your body, bent at 90 degrees. And the height of your hand from the ground is the length of pole you should use. And then beyond that, there's some personal preference involved. You know, for instance, I like my pole significantly longer than that. But again, like the The poles I use for classic skiing are 160 centimeters. For skate skiing, I'm using 170 centimeter poles. So for me, using 135 or 140 centimeter pole for running even, it doesn't feel challenging. Whereas if you don't have a background of, you know, hundreds to thousands of hours utilizing those really long poles, you know, getting poles longer than that 90 degree elbow angle length will feel even more unwieldy. Everything's a cost benefit. If you have longer poles, you're able to transfer more of the work from your legs to your arms. But you risk, you know, tripping yourself. So maybe, you know, for a guy like Debo, using a slightly shorter pole, you know, allows him to get some of the benefits of poles without the major detriment. Whereas a guy like Francois, who's done a little bit more of the probably some ski skating and some skimo from his home in France, he's more used to the long ones and can handle them. Now, if Dylan decided he wanted to use longer poles, you know, he could spend a winter, you know, on snow, utilizing longer poles, and maybe he'd be better off for it. But, you know, that's a sacrifice and a gamble for a runner of his caliber, and it may, you know, impact his career in a way that wouldn't actually help him.
Yeah, the individual factor here is so interesting and so difficult, and there's not a lot of research in this space at all right now. There's definitely some research coming out that looks at hiking at certain grades versus running, but as far as I know, there isn't a lot of research out there looking at, like, the metabolic cost, for example, of, say, power hiking with poles versus not. Have you seen anything to that effect?
Not a ton. I mean, I used to love running with Jackson Brill in Boulder because he was doing research on,
yes,
you know, the run hike transitions at different grades. And he said once that, like, I was the best downhill poler he'd ever run with. I took that as a bit of a compliment, but I think it's also because a lot of times the guys at the front of the field, you know, I am faster descending without poles. Like, just, I've done, you know, time trials and tested it. And I am faster downhill. So if I was running, you know, a 30K, or if I was, you know, a sub five, like Skyrunner 50K type, I probably wouldn't use poles. On the
downhill, right, specifically.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm not that. I'm a straight up endurance, super long, kind of runner. And, you know, I just use them. So runners have to make that choice. You know, I think there is research looking at the additional energy cost of using poles on uphills. But anything related to downhill running is really difficult to quantify. You know, you can look at different markers of muscle damage. You could look at VO2, but, you know, those are going to be kind of indirect markers of, you know, do they help you over the course of a 100-mile race?
Yeah, and it's multifactorial at that point too. So it's really hard to kind of pull what is actually having an effect.
Like, apart. Is it annoying to take my poles off to drink or to eat? Yeah, it's a minor inconvenience. And did I wipe out in the old Gabe 30K while, you know, trying to get a gel? Yeah, absolutely. that doesn't happen often, but it does happen.
It does sometimes. So I've got a great example of this, or a question kind of off an example of this, is that I had an athlete in TDS last year and is really efficient with poles, loves using poles. And he noticed that one of his takeaways from the event was that, like, he needs to put his poles away on some of the downhills because he was really having a hard time kind of getting more quickly into that running motion from a performance standpoint, you know, trying to, you know, jockeying for position type of thing, as opposed to just surviving TDS. And that brings up an interesting point too, is, like, you know, how do you help athletes navigate the decisions of, one, to use poles, one, when to stow the poles? Like, is there a plan that goes into place for an athlete lining up for one of these races that you might work through with them to try to, like, you know, make sure that we're ticking the boxes of, like, how to be most efficient out there?
Yeah. And I think, it again, depends largely on the athlete, but I know in myself, I'm trained with poles so much that I'm completely dependent upon them. I go for a run without poles, and, like, my legs burn because they're not getting the assistance from poles on the
clients. So maybe you're too extreme.
I'm too extreme to the pole side. So I think, you know, there's value in both training with and without poles in hilly terrain. You know, don't just use poles in the hills and no poles in the flats. It's good to do some hills with no poles. And maybe for the novice pole user, do some flatter runs with poles. So practice those extremes a little bit, and don't become a complete one trick pony. Like when I broke my poles at like mile 40 at Wasatch, I was devastated. I considered dropping out just because I didn't have my poles. I knew I had.
Yeah, I talked to an athlete recently who broke one pole at a race last year before I started working with him, and he was like,
"I had spares at mile 80.
Do not recommend."
But I had to do, you know, a hard 40 miles of Wasatch with one pole. It's good to practice both with and without. But you also have to know, like, how much practice with poles do you need for them to be a positive addition to your race. You don't want to show up on race day with poles for the first time and, you know, find that they're more of a hindrance than a help.
Yeah. And I have athletes who I think have gotten to that kind of other place where it's like, they're okay with poles and they don't mind using them, but they've recognized that they're just much more efficient without. And they've, you know, they've done the UTMB thing where they carry their poles, you know, in their pack the entire race and never use them type of thing. And I look at someone like Casey Lichtig, who, you know, famously runs in Nebraska and has done well at UTMB. And it's like, you can do these races without poles, but you need to be really, really efficient in whatever running modality you have available to you.
Yeah. As with everything in coaching and training, you know, you've got to make the most of what you have available to you. And, you know, if you're a flatlander training for mountain races, maybe that's getting really good without poles. I think, you know, poles generally, you know, it seems like at least the perception is it's more the back of the packers. The longer you're out there, the more important poles become, because they're almost, I look at them as almost a preservation tool. They preserve your legs. Often the front runners have more, you know, just more training, more miles. Their legs don't need as much preservation as perhaps a mid to back of the packer. You know, that being said, you know, ultra running, you know, particularly as you get over the 100K, 160K distance, it's all a race of preservation.
And attrition. Okay, so it sounds like despite us being pole maniacs and obsessed with using our poles so much so that going for a flat run is kind of off-putting, it doesn't sound like we're coming to a conclusion that like runners have to, like ultimately have to use poles, right? Like that, like, I guess, is there anyone that you've coached for a long time, you're predominantly coaching skiers right now, but what has that looked like, you know, historically? Have you nudged athletes you think too hard to use poles who might have been better off without, or vice versa?
That's a good question. You know, I'm just trying to think of a couple of the athletes I've coached for a long time. You know, Hilly is a really interesting one. I've never actually seen Hillary run with her poles. She mostly trains without them, and then she shows up at races and uses them, and it seems to work for her. When I used to live in Boulder and run with her a lot, I'd have my poles out and she would just, you know, be running right up the grades. So, but then, you know, there's other runners who didn't know how to use poles and made a really big effort to use them. Largely if, you know, as they're transitioning to longer and longer races, we've kind of made the decision that, you know, yeah, you survived this trail marathon, you know, really hilly one, but to make that jump to 50K, maybe it's worth, you know, putting some real focus attention onto use of poles. You know, and unfortunately, like it might be more than a couple weeks to get really efficient with poles. That might be a months to years long proposition, depending on how quickly you pick it up. You know, but I can think of a couple athletes that, you know, have no ski background and we made a very strategic choice to learn to use poles. You know, if they targeted an event like a TDS, like a Speed Goat, like a Power of Four, some of your high altitude, 3,000 meter vert 50 Ks or or similar longer races, you know, where we thought poles would be useful. And we put in the time and the work to make poles a strength rather than a weakness.
Yeah, I think that kind of what I'm getting out of that is that, like, if you have the terrain available, or if you really feel like poles are going to be your friend, you have to put in the work to get there. And that's something that you're going to have to feel out, and it could take no time at all, but it could take a lot of time. And then I think, you know, the next component of that is being okay maybe with the knowledge that you're not going to use poles, or you're not going to need poles, but maybe it's one of those, I don't know, I think I'll still send all my Flatlanders to UTMB or similar races with poles on board, and they can always put them away if they decide that it's not really working for them, just because I feel like you're right. It's not to say that they're a crutch, but there is that preservation component to them.
Worst case scenario, they can be used as a crutch. Like I've waddled the last, you know, 15 miles of the Leadville 100, which are totally runnable, like with poles, you know, on busted up feet. Would I have finished without poles? Probably not. You know, that being said, you know, Leadville or races like that, where the course is very, you know, segregated into flat sections and hilly sections, you know, if you have the capacity to pick up poles, you know, for certain sections and only use them then, and then drop them for the flat parts, you know, that's totally doable as well.
Yeah, you took my poles away from me. I did. Think at Leadville. Yeah. You're like, okay, well, you're done.
I've had
no more.
Know, I remember running the Hemez 50 miler a couple years ago when I was like, I was feeling quite fit. And I ran with poles, and I found that I used them too much as a crutch. There was too much sort of douche grade running that I should have run. And instead I hiked it with poles, and I ended up losing time. You know, that's when I was more competitive. And I think the poles encouraged me to hike more than I should have in that instance. But again, it's a very individual kind of case by case, course by course, basis. You know, the calculus changes all the time on whether poles are, yep, are something you should use or not.
Yeah. And so it sounds like for sure that this is an individual, very individual, right? Like every runner is going to be a different case.
It might
case.
Change for the same runner based on the day. You might have a day where you're feeling great and you're hands on thighs, power hiking, and you're feeling smooth on the downhills, and life is good. And then you twist an ankle, and all of a sudden you need, you know, you need those poles to finish the race. So
I guess, you know, outside of the individual, have you looked at, is there any like math, or this is a question that came up recently kind of, on a survey sent out to runners, kind of like trying to get to the bottom of like, when are we starting to use poles? Is there a kilometers or miles to vert, like to feet, you know, a change per mile or type of race that you think that there's a line as far as like poles versus no poles for an athlete who could go either way? For
so,
example.
I mean, I use some rough calculations, like with athletes I coach, you know, I call anything with less than 100 feet of climbing per mile, I call that flat. And I apologize to many folks out there for whom 100 feet per mile, is a hilly run. But I've been in mountainous areas for the last 15 years and, sorry. So then like, you know, 100 to 150 feet per mile, I call that rolling, and that's probably still not pole terrain. You know, unless you're a Nordic skier running through a bog in Norway, trying to get a very specific adaptation there. 150 to 200 feet of climb per mile, I consider that kind of hilly. And that's sort of the threshold where, for, you know, front end of the field athlete, like they're probably running every step in those places, and poles are probably not worthwhile. For an athlete who's not, you know, Corinne Malcolm, a Hillary Allen, a John Rea, shout out to my boy.
Shout out to John Rea.
You know, poles might be helpful there because you're not necessarily looking at, you know, running in that terrain for a 16-hour 100-miler. You know, you're running in that terrain for a 26 plus, 28 plus hour 100 miler. And then you get into like 200 plus feet per mile, 250, 300 feet per mile, the UTMBs, the hard rocks, that's like, poles are a no brainer, in my opinion there.
Yeah. And there'll still be athletes that are very successful without, but I do think that you're right that it becomes, if you're going to commit to a race like that and you're considering using poles, it's worth putting the practice in when you're getting into that, that 300 plus feet per mile change, or really, really long, like 200 plus mile races. I don't know if you've worked with anyone recently in that regard, but you know, that's an interesting proposition. I've got an athlete in Tahoe 200 and I was like, hey, are you going to use poles? And he was like, I don't think so. Like, I only like to use them on very specific climbs. And it's not that, like, there's not going to be that many, like, it's not continuous climbing at Tahoe 200 this year. And so, you know, I don't think I'm going to use them. And for me, it's like, oh, it's 200 miles. Yeah. I'm going to use poles. Do you think that there's a length factor there for people that should be considered? I think there's
almost a time on feet factor, right? You look at you know, every race course is going to take, you know, some people much less than other people. Right. Like Speed Goat's a good example. Yeah. You know, the winners are sub 6 hours. And the cutoff, I think, is 12. So if you're out there for six hours, you're probably fine without poles. If you're going to be out there for 12, you know, maybe poles are the answer. And you know, that sort of continues to climb up. But I think once you're getting over like 20, 24 hours, poles are probably going to be helpful for most people.
Okay, so we've got the individual factor, but then we also have the 250, 300 plus feet per mile factor and maybe the 12 plus hour factor, or at least like let's look at like kind of where you're going to fall in the cutoff for races that allow poles, and if you can pick up poles at certain points or not, or you've got to carry them
the whole time. I think there's very few, like Leadville being one where Leadville, you can have mules in Leadville. Leadville's like lawless.
There's no rules at Leadville.
But yeah, you can you know, use them for power line and hope and leave them with your crew the rest of the time, or have your pacer carry them. So yeah, there's all kinds of considerations that go into it.
Are there any common mistakes you see athletes make when it comes to practicing with poles or using poles in a race that might not dawn on us just like kind of, you know, going into a race for the first time with poles,
so,
for example?
I had a little beef with Buzz Burrell a number of years ago. Mad respect for Buzz Burrell but I was testing some ultimate direction poles, and they had like the straps coming out of the top, and the strap was completely useless. To get propulsion uphill, you're pulling on the strap. And maybe on a technical downhill, you're taking the strap off so you don't dislocate your shoulder, but, like the strap provides stability. It's like, would you run with your shoes untied? So runners who cut the straps off their poles, I think that's stupid, and that you should learn how to use your poles such that you can use your straps. Sorry.
You don't have to grip your poles. You're not using that's kind of the thing here, right? You don't have to like.
And I've had a couple margaritas tonight, so maybe that's showing.
We're really passionate about
use the straps
on poles.
And yes, it does make it annoying if you have to take your poles off to get your gel or get your water bottle. But then, you know, if you're going to use poles, you set up your fueling and hydration system such that you can just reach down to your vest and, you know, suck off the straw.
And you practice it. You practice it in training runs, right? Absolutely. Just like you practice your nutrition, you got to practice this in training runs too.
So that's one mistake, not using the straps as they are intended to be used. Stashing them for downhills. Like I think they have a greater value in the downhill, just from reducing the amount of eccentric contraction. And I often find as I fatigue, you know, they're just helpful for stability. You know, like I've had hundreds, thousands, countless times where like I've caught a toe and would totally have supermanned, ass over tea kettle down the trail had I not, you know, had my pole in a place to catch me. So if you're good enough, you know, they become sort of like training wheels on downhills. They allow for you to make some mistakes on downhills without suffering catastrophic consequences.
Yeah. And I don't think of them as brakes. I think of them as like, as training wheels, right? It's like that guide, that balance point, that Madeira that I ran in April had a ton of like kind of step downs, like kind of big steps downhill, and you can kind of get your poles out in front of you and really take some of that load off without it being a big braking force. But I think you're right. Like it's that factor of like, if you're in a short race or you're at the very front of the field, maybe, you know, putting the poles away could be beneficial. But otherwise on the downhill, I think for most of the field, I'm going to include myself in there, I get a lot of benefit out of keeping my pulls out on those downhills
if you're,
for the most
part. If your limiting factor is, you know, aerobic capacity, you know, fitness, then maybe pulls aren't that important. But if your limiting factor is just the, you know, sheer muscle damage incurred by running, you know, hundreds of kilometers, then pulls can definitely offset that.
Yeah, I think that's hugely valuable. Okay, so we're going to use our straps like they were intended. I'm a big fan of that. I think it takes the load off. You're not gripping your pulls. You're not demanding all that extra energy from your forearms. You can lean into your pulls in quite a big way, and then not stashing them up for every downhill. Is there any other mistakes that you see runners use, particularly when they're newer to using pulls?
I can't think of any, so I'll toss it back to you.
So the one that I talked to an athlete about recently, they're going over to race in Cortina. They're not doing the long race at Lavaredo. They're doing another race, and they're gonna use poles. And they said, anything I should keep in mind? And I said, yes, like, it's gonna be really easy to get into the groove and have your head down on a big long climb and all of a sudden realize you haven't had anything to eat or anything to drink in over an hour. Because it's, you know, you're not touching anything, you're not touching your pack, you're not touching your bottles. And so being extra cognizant, I have done this at UTMB where your head's down, or at TDS, your head's down, you're climbing. It's 90 minutes go by and you haven't had a single sip of water. Yeah,
at Old Gabe, I'm like, oh shoot, you know, I'm due to, you know, slam a gel right now, but I'm grinding this climb. I am cranking. I'll just put it off a little bit. So yeah, it does become, you have to be a little more cognizant, a little more thoughtful about your fueling strategy. And sometimes it means like, okay, I know I'm almost at the top of this climb and then I'll eat, you know, and if it's a, you know, a 5 or 10 minute addition, then maybe that's okay. Or if it's like, wow, I have no idea how long this climb is, so I'm just going to keep cranking and eat at the top, and that ends up being an hour or 90 minutes later, and then you're in caloric deficit, then maybe that's, you know, not the best idea.
Yeah, and a whole world of hurt, so don't do that. Okay, so I think the big takeaways I have here is that it's going to be highly individual. There's no 100% you should use poles or not, but, you know, there are courses where you should consider it, that you can practice even in flat areas if it's something that you really want to do. But practice is really important, just like you'd practice anything else. And there are easy mistakes to do, but also to avoid. Is there anything else that you think people should know? Who are on the fence, or maybe we should pitch it both ways. Let's do this. We're gonna pitch it both ways. This is a fun podcast tonight. We're gonna give two pieces of advice. Your piece of advice for someone who is obsessed with poles and needs to give them a break, and your piece of advice for someone who is maybe on the fence and isn't sure if they should use poles and why should they?
And this is okay. to Joe Gray. Mad respect, but poles are okay. And I know you've had some Twitter beef with folks before, Joe, about how poles are not okay, but some of us love them. yeah. I think he just won.
That's a good third person
title. Incredible. To the anti-polar, it's like, don't knock it till you try it. To the on the fence polar, I think it varies, right? Like, you know, I've got an athlete here in Boulder that I've, you know, known for years, and she's trained for mountainous 50 milers, where poles have been an important component. This spring she did Miwok. So it was important that we had her do runnable hills without poles, because Miwok, you know, while it's a very hilly 100K course, it's not a poles course. You know, if you're a proponent of poles, be willing to put them away if the race you are training for necessitates it. And similarly, if you are, you know, generally a flatter runner, and you are making forays into hillier races, or maybe you're a marathon 50K runner and you're making forays into longer races, you know, don't be afraid to try poles if you think they'll help you. And there was a study, it might have been like 15 or more years ago, just looking at, you know, even like Nordic walking, you know, walking with poles. And, you know, even that saves some impact. So if you are concerned that, you know, your legs crapping out on you will be your limiting factor in your upcoming race, then maybe poles are for you, even if it's not, you know, what one would think of as a mountain race. And a lot of 100 milers, you know, even ones that aren't considered mountains, you know, if it's a 30 or 36, probably not a 30, but if it's a 32 or 36 hour cutoff, you can walk every step and finish. And in that instance, you know, walking with poles may be better. So there's times and places to try it out.
For sure. And then what about someone like you? Someone like you who maybe leans too far.
That's
on
a good question.
The pole direction,
I think,
sometimes.
You know, like I said, you know, when I've tried to be competitive before, like I think I would have been better off doing some without poles, just to have a little more confidence in my ability to run uphill, instead of always going into a hike. So I think my notion would be, don't become so dependent on them. You know, intentionally, you know, instead of 85% of your running with poles, you know, maybe cap it at 50 once you're at a certain level of proficiency. And similarly, you know, maybe be a little more strategic about where you use them, and put them away for those, you know, those 5 to 10% grade runnable climbs, and only take them out for the, you know, the steeper stuff, where it really is more effective to hike.
Yeah. So from either side, you got to make your training count, both with poles and without poles. And I think that's a great takeaway message. So maybe we'll have provoked more questions in people than we answered on this, but I don't think that's a bad thing. So I think if you are, let's say, pole curious, or maybe pole skeptic, right? You could be pole skeptical or pole curious, reach out to us. Like, we would love to continue, I think, to push this conversation or have this conversation go down the road. So do not hesitate to reach out. Adam, thank you so much
for
your time this evening.
I'm not sponsored
by Open Direction, I hope,
or Lecky or Black Diamond. I've used all their poles and they're all wonderful. But if you want to send me some poles, I would happily use them.
Sponsor ploy, get Adam St. Pierre some poles. We'll make sure that ends up in the show notes. Adam, thank you so much again this evening. And like I said, if you've got any more questions about poles, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find me on Twitter. I'm happy to answer those questions as they might
Thanks,
come up.
Corinne. Go Bobcats.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Trainwright Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to visit our website at trainwright.com/podcast, where you can find social links and more for our guests. If you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to the podcast, share it with your friends, and leave us a rating on iTunes. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.